Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we now know who was being monitored. Carter Page. Surveillance order would have been based on false evidence. Carter Page, former Trump campaign advisor, had said Wednesday that a reported surveillance warrant targeting him last summer would have been based on false evidence. Of course, I mean, to be completely honest, what else do you expect? But Page did talk to the Washington Post. Page is a strange guy to listen to. He's a little bit hard to follow. He seems a little bit mentally unstable. I'm not saying he is, but there's just kind of a halting nature to his dialogue and his statements that just make him seem like he's on the verge of some breakdown. It's just kind of a weird way that he has of speaking, but he says there is a tremendous amount of false evidence, and there was various reporting about where the false evidence may have come from, such as the dodgy dossier compiled by discredited British intelligence officer Christopher Steele. James Comey disagrees, so that's where a lot of this information came from. So, got a little bit of that report for you right here. Nobody ever really heard of this guy in the typical public, but here's a little bit from Fox. And hold on one second here. And this is with Brett Baer.
Surveillance on a former advisor to the Donald Trump presidential campaign. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge talks tonight with Carter Page.
I have nothing that I want to hide, and the more that the truth comes out, the better.
Former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page responded to allegations first reported by the Washington Post, later confirmed by Fox, that he was the subject of U.S. government surveillance last summer as part of the FBI Russia probe.
To get a surveillance warrant, the FBI has to have solid evidence. So how do you explain it?
Well, we shall see. Again, there was a tremendous amount of false evidence.
And Page blamed the so-called Trump dossier, compiled by Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer.
There was various reporting about where that false evidence may have come from, such as the dodgy dossier.
But in a recent speech, the FBI Director James Comey said it's a high legal bar to monitor an American citizen.
Those applications are often as thick as my wrist or thicker. It is a huge pain in the neck to get permission to bug somebody in the United States. And that's the way it should be.
The Senate Intelligence Committee senior Democrat is fully briefed on the Russia probe.
I can't comment on the FISA warrant, but if a FISA warrant has been issued, it is a very, very, very serious matter.
In 2013, the FBI investigated efforts by Russian President Vladimir Putin's government to recruit Americans. Page's name surfaced in the probe, identified as Mail-1.
According to these court documents, the allegation is that you passed energy documents to a Russian intelligence operative. Is that what happened?
It was the same energy, quote unquote, energy documents that I gave to my students at NYU.
Did the Russians try to recruit you?
I was never asked by anyone to do anything untoward or otherwise.
Page said he had virtually no contact with former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, whose spokesman said an Associated Press report alleging Manafort received $1.2 million in off-the-books payments is, quote, misleading and incorrect.
And a decision by Manafort and lobbyists connected to him to register with the Justice Department as agents of a foreign government for their Russian work was described today as routine following lengthy discussions with federal authorities, Brett.
Kevin, thank you.
You're welcome.
Here's a little bit more. I mean, there's not going to be, in my opinion, there's not going to be anything more to this story than all the other stories that have come out, but I find it to be interesting. Now, here's Shepard Smith from Fox. This is kind of a strange story because this guy seemed to be set up to become the main anchor at Fox, or maybe he was the main anchor. I haven't spent enough time at watching Fox News over the years, but he supposedly was at a party and was with his boyfriend and was going to announce his marriage to his boyfriend. And Fox News got wind of it and they demoted him somehow. But Shepard Smith, I don't think is as conservative as some of the others, but Shepard Smith outing Carter Page as a Russian agent.
To monitor the communications of Carter Page. At the time, Carter Page was an advisor to the presidential candidate Donald Trump. A government source confirms this with Fox News Today after the Washington Post first reported this story. They say it was part of an investigation into possible links between Russia and the Trump campaign, and that the feds obtained the warrant after convincing a judge that there was probable cause to believe Carter Page was acting as an agent on behalf of Russia. As a candidate, Donald Trump once identified Carter Page as his foreign policy advisor. A White House official, as you might imagine, now says Page was not on a list of official advisors, wasn't paid, and never met with the president. That's what they tell us. The official also said Carter Page was an advisor for only a couple of months and on a limited basis. Page has denied any wrongdoing in his dealings with Russia or the Trump campaign. But think of this. The prosecutors were able to go to a federal judge, a FISA judge, behind closed doors, provide enough evidence to convince this judge that there is probable cause Carter Page was working with or on behalf of the Russian government. Our chief intelligence correspondent, Catherine Herridge, is live in Washington. I can't think of anything much more damning.
Well, we just got her report. So, I mean, what did they say? 11 requests in the history of the FISA court have been turned down. So, I mean, I don't think that the fact that they got out FISA warrant is proof, obviously. Anyway, just to keep you posted on that one. Let me see. I've got one more clip on here, but I don't know if you necessarily are going to be interested in it. Let me get it open for you. Hope you're well. 13th of April. Starting to get warmer, folks. So what are your plans for the future? What are your plans to stay cool? You going to get your swamp cooler fixed? Yes, I do have a little bit more here. I just want you to have a fully informed approach to this puppy. Now, we have established the fact that there is huge hatred for Trump, so the media is going to just be licking its chops like it has been since before he got into office. Here is Jake Tapper, who is an out-and-out agent for leftism in the media. And he's going after Carter Page, who's a little bit hard to follow and listen to. He's like somebody who had to relearn how to speak, you know, after some sort of a health crisis. Here you go.
Post, as you know, has reported that last year the FBI went to a FISA judge and argued successfully that there was probable cause to believe that you were acting as an agent for a foreign government. So my question is, were you?
Of course I wasn't, Jake. It's just such a joke that it's beyond words. And what's interesting about it is March 20th, Director Comey, he made the point that people can lie to the press, people can lie to the American public, all they want in politics. What's interesting about last night's report is if it's true, well, there's a different standard when it comes to evidence in court. So all of this false evidence that you've been hearing about myself with the dodgy dossier and other false reports going back through most of last summer, well, that will have very different implications. So this is a real game changer if it turns out to be true.
All right, and here's one more clip on this from Thiessen at Fox. There's no there.
Carter Page, according to the Washington Post story, Carter Page described himself as a junior member of the informal all-volunteer foreign policy advisory group. The Post reports that he repeatedly asked for meetings with Donald Trump and each time was turned down. He attended a total of 3 dinners with the foreign policy advisory group, none of which Trump attended. He didn't get it. He never got a meeting with Trump. He never got a White House job. He never got an administration job. So he's a peripheral figure who was peripherally involved in the campaign. There's no there. And here's the kicker. The Post reports, quote, Page is the only American to have had his communications directly targeted with a FISA warrant in 2016 as part of the Russia probe. So this is the full story, it seems like. And there's nothing there. So if you're looking for a big reveal, a big story showing that there's some collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, this certainly isn't it.
Well, and some on the left, though, this morning are saying to get one of these FISA orders takes a lot of work. FBI Director James Comey had testified that when you go in for one of these, the application for the warrant is as thick, he said, as your wrist. It is something that only 3 senior DOJ officials could even okay it to go to the court itself. So the left will say, listen, they must have had something on Carter Page. They're pointing to the fact that he had contacts with a known operative in 2013. They tried to recruit him as an intelligence asset. They're going to claim victory on this story because they're going to say it proves their point that there was there.
Yeah, but again, he was a junior, he is self-described junior figure who never met Donald Trump. If this is the, you know, there may be truth to it. We have no idea what was in that FISA warrant request, whether there was there, that will have to remain to be seen as the investigation goes out. But he's a peripheral figure in the Trump universe. And moreover, Shannon, this whole notion that there was that Donald Trump is Putin's man in Washington, Putin's handpicked president, has been completely destroyed by the strike on Syria.
All right. Here's one last little clip here from Fox.
Depth analysis. Let's bring in Doug Schoen, a former advisor to President Clinton and former New York City.
By the way, wouldn't you be pissed off if your parents named you after Carter? Jimmy Carter, the biggest failure except for Obama.
City Mayor Mike Bloomberg as well. Also, Ed Rollins, director of President Reagan's reelection campaign in 1984. Both are Fox News contributors. Catherine just teed up a question that I want to run by both of you. And Ed, I'll start with you. I mean, does it concern you that this information about a private American citizen has somehow been leaked?
Certainly it bothers me. I think the critical thing here, though, is before you go to FISA court, you really have to have a lot of information. It's not just I have a suspicion that someone's doing something. You really have to put a very thick document forward. The court itself has a responsibility.
Same information. All right, let's take a little break here. 6:18. We've got the Rossin report today. But Ben Rossin has asked Rick Little to sit in for him to give us an overview of the Senate and the Congress and political activity up north. 6:19, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. So nice to hang out with you so early. And we'll be right back. Well, good morning. If you're just tuning in, we talked about Carter Page, who's been named as the one person that they put a FISA warrant on and wiretapped him. And apparently nothing came out because there's been no statement from anybody in the know that he has done anything wrong. Now, I've got to play for you a little bit on Bill O'Reilly. Things have been developing quickly. There is a claim that Bill O'Reilly has been a serial sexual harasser and has been sued and lost either lost lawsuits or I think probably settled. But here's a little bit from today's show.
Take a break was planned a while ago, but with advertisers fleeing his show in droves, new questions are being raised about whether he will indeed return to the air.
Caution. You are about
Fox News star Bill O'Reilly announcing Tuesday night that he's taking a break
During his tip of the day segment, the embattled host of the O'Reilly Factor told viewers he's going on a previously scheduled vacation.
This time of year, I grab some vacation because it's spring and Easter time. Last fall, I booked a trip that should be terrific. I'll have a full report when I return.
O'Reilly is set to return on April 24th, but the announcement comes on the heels of a sexual harassment scandal that's causing rampant speculation about his future.
Inside Fox News, there's really a feeling that Bill O'Reilly's future at the network is in jeopardy. And tonight's announcement that he's going on vacation has fueled speculation that he may never return to the air at Fox News.
While O'Reilly's viewers are standing by him, dozens of companies are not. More than 60 have pulled their commercials from his show. Rupert Murdoch and his sons, who run Fox News' parent company, 21st Century Fox, are reportedly on O'Reilly's future.
James Murdoch is pushing for O'Reilly to be taken off the air, but his father, Rupert Murdoch, is resisting because he really focuses on the bottom line. And Bill O'Reilly has, up until this point, been a tremendous profit center for the network.
Earlier this week, one of O'Reilly's accusers, Dr. Wendy Walsh, spoke to NBC News, saying her claim of sexual harassment against O'Reilly will now be investigated by the network.
Well, obviously, I was encouraged that they're going to actually take this first step and do some kind of investigation.
A guest who frequently appeared on O'Reilly's show, Walsh says the 67-year-old promised to make her a paid contributor at the network in 2013. But after rebuffing his advances, Walsh says O'Reilly failed to follow through.
I'm not here for the money. In fact, my silence is not for sale. I'm here for the future of my daughters and all the daughters of America who are entering the workforce in droves. And I want them to have a safe, non-toxic work environment.
She's here. Her silence is not for sale. She's here for all the daughters.
A number of substitute hosts are expected to fill in for O'Reilly.
All right. So anyway, well, I mean, he could quite likely be, I'm not saying he's guilty, of course, but I mean, the rumors have been out there, but I mean, the guy's a talent, you know, so Fox would be uncertainly, given up a lot of profit if he left, but you know, who knows? 626 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces, same 1450, 523 1450. I just get a kick out of some of these. So many of these people, this lady, Wendy Walsh, whoever she is, I'm here to protect the daughters of America. I mean, so many of these people seem like they're so, they're caught up in their own myth, you know. Got some local news. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. All right, so I've got a little bit here on a couple of stories I'm going to give you, one of which is the future of Steve Bannon. And Steve Bannon is the top, probably the top, I can't really say this because I don't know enough about the administration, but one of the top conservative voices in Trump's administration and has been very influential, supposedly getting him to keep his campaign promises. And then I'm going to get on to something called the Hyperloop that I've been wanting to tell you about all week, but I kind of put it off for one reason or another. And then we've got Rick Little coming on to talk about the legislative session. But here's a little bit on Trump distancing himself from Steve Bannon. Apparently Trump did not like the idea that Steve Bannon was either holding himself out as the voice of conscience, as the Svengali, and taking away the credit from Trump. And Trump said, I was beating people before I ever met Steve.
Just getting a very public slap on the wrist. Donald Trump declining to throw his full confidence behind Steve Bannon in an interview with the New York Post, saying, Steve is a good guy, but I told them to straighten it out or I will. Those comments coming just days after tensions between Bannon and Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner reached a boiling point, prompting Trump to tell the two of them on Friday to iron out their differences. While the White House is publicly downplaying staff spats,
A lot of it is overblown, what you see in the media.
A source familiar with the situation says the president was irked by suggestions that Bannon is the one driving the agenda. As Trump's allies noted, Burst could better serve the president by laying low.
Staff are there to serve the president of the United States. They're not there to serve themselves.
In the New York Post interview, Trump downplayed the role of his own chief strategist, saying, I like Steve, but you have to remember he was not involved in my campaign until very late. I had already beaten all the senators and all the governors, and I didn't know Steve. I'm my own strategist, and it wasn't like I was going to change strategies because I was facing crooked Hillary. But Trump's attempt to diminish Bannon as a latecomer to the campaign hardly meshes with reality. The former head of the right-wing nationalist Breitbart News website was one of Trump's prominent cheerleaders, pointing out at a conservative conference this year that Breitbart took notice of Trump's appeal early on.
It's really CPAC that really originally gave him the springboard. The first time at Breitbart, we started seeing him and saw how people, his speeches resonated with people.
In the early days of the Trump White House, Bannon's influence steadily expanded, eventually landing him on the cover of Time magazine, which dubbed Bannon the Great Manipulator.
Send in Steve Bannon.
His perceived importance was famously lampooned on Saturday Night Live.
All right, so here's a little bit more on what's going on for the future of Steve Bannon.
President Trump appearing tough towards chief strategist Steve Bannon, telling the New York Post, quote, I like Steve, but you have to remember he was not involved in my campaign until very late. Steve is a good guy, but I told them to straighten it out or I will. Here now is former Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown, Fox News contributor, and Jessica Tarlov, Bustle Senior Research Director. Jessica, what do you think? It sounds like Bannon might be on his way out. And if so, I mean, that's the boogeyman.
Totally. It looks like globalist Gary and Jared Kushner might be winning this battle in the end. And Dina Powell, who I think has played a really seminal role in this transition, if that's what's to happen. We do know, though, that Donald Trump vacillates between his opinions. We've seen a lot of that today. He's changed positions a number of times just in the last few hours. So tomorrow, Steve Bannon could be his best friend.
Don't get me wrong. I love him, but I mean, that's not a...
It's not his usual, enthusiasm. But then again, things change fast in this administration. I just wouldn't count him out. I'd love to see him out. I just wouldn't count him out yet.
I don't want to run out of time without switching to our other topic, Scott.
All right. So anyway, let's get on to this Hyperloop here. Let me get you some. Yeah, I think you're going to find the Hyperloop to be very interesting. The Hyperloop is something that you may have heard of, may not, but then again, probably don't realize there's a plan to use the Hyperloop on the border, believe it or not. So I've got something on that and on the Hyperloop in general, which supposedly can answer a lot of big questions for transportation in America. High-speed, long-distance transportation, that remains to be seen. Of course, 635 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. And... Somehow Elon Musk, whose company just passed General Motors in terms of worth, his Tesla, supposedly had a lot to do with the ideas behind it. We'll be right back. All right, so what is the Hyperloop? All right, the Hyperloop, I've got a little bit here for you. A couple of different clips and Hyperloop. All right, so it's kind of like an elevated train in a tube, if that makes sense. I've got too many boxes open for you right now, but I want to get you the whole Hyperloop experience. And, well, let's just cut out one of these boxes here. All right, here is CNBC. Hyperloop One unveils the future of transportation, CNBC Squawk Box.
Well, today in Washington, Rob and I and many of the team are here. Hyperloop One is now 250 employees strong. We just came from Vegas 24 hours ago and saw the last tube of the first full-scale Hyperloop in the world being built that we're going to have towards our Kitty Hawk moment and then show the world that Hyperloop works. We're the only company in the world that's actually building it. And the Vision for America is announcing a number of initiatives and routes that Rob Lloyd, our CEO, is going to speak to that we're very excited that comes out of our global competition. Routes all over America that can solve all of the traffic and logistics problems that are causing so much friction and pain in people's lives in America.
And we're now showing an image right now of what the Hyperloop looks like. This is a proof of concept here.
No, that's real. That's not a proof of concept. That is not computer graphics.
No, that is real.
On the screen right now.
I appreciate that is absolutely real. But the question I was going to ask is, in terms of rolling this out in a meaningful way, what kind of timeline could we be talking about? And what are the true costs? Because there's the technology itself, but then when you start talking about digging tunnels, if in fact that is the approach to take, it becomes very expensive very quickly. Rob.
Yeah, I think the most exciting part about Hyperloop is we're at least two-thirds the cost of high-speed rail. We need much less land, and we can go both above ground or underground to come into city centers. Many of the projects that we're highlighting today that we've been reviewing as well with transportation experts over the last couple of days cover all of those use cases. We can go in a dense urban corridor like the Northeast. We can use big open spaces like in Colorado or Nevada or Texas. And the idea of going from Denver to Vail in under 10 minutes for you ski enthusiasts, I think is something that would really, really change our experiences. So think of two-thirds the cost of high-speed rail, three times the speed, technology that's all been developed in America, built in America.
Well, look, I've opened too many boxes, and so I got to take a little break here and come back and reboot, but I'll give you some more Hyperloop experience. 642 Kelly Connolly, I'm Les Cruz, the same, 1450 523 1450 805 6180. Okay, Hyperloop. Here is, I'm looking, but I had a hard time finding one that was just kind of a straight up front explanation of what the Hyperloop was without the need for pictures. But here, all right, here is one clip that is called 700 miles per hour in a tube, CNN, the Hyperloop experience.
Time is money.
Hold on just a second here. Check her out.
Perhaps that's why we complain about travel. How can we get there faster? Can this experience be better? We dream about moving comfortably from place to place in the blink of an eye. That's essentially the dream of the Hyperloop.
What exactly is the Hyperloop?
It's very similar to an airplane on high altitudes. You have a low pressure environment inside the tube, a capsule that doesn't touch anywhere, hovers, and then because of the low pressure doesn't encounter a lot of resistance.
How do you envision the Hyperloop changing the way we live?
To connect two major cities that are normally 6, 7, 8, 9 hours apart within 15 to 30 minutes changes the way we live. We're living in areas that are completely overfilled.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting in traffic every single day for hours. So.
And you think the Hyperloop could be the solution?
I think the Hyperloop is for sure one of the solutions.
A possible solution, maybe, but it's far from a reality. This concept of humans traveling around in tubes has been around for more than a century. Then, in 2013, Elon Musk drafted up actual blueprints and put the challenge of building it to the engineering community. And, as it turns out, there were a few willing to try. Hyperloop Transportation Technologies took on the challenge, but quickly realized they didn't have the design expertise. Enter UCLA.
The engineering aspects of this, they're actually quite simple. It's really the design that is the most technically challenging.
What's so challenging is it's an unconventional system.
And so you sort of have to invent everything from the ground up. The track is an entirely different element. The station is entirely different. The process of boarding is different. So as architects, so what we're trying to do is stitch together the technology, the social change, and the human experience.
So do we know what it's going to feel like to be traveling at 700 miles an hour in one of these tubes?
You'll accelerate.
And you'll feel that physically.
You'll feel that as a thrust, like a very fast, powerful car, like a Tesla. You will feel almost no sense of motion once you're at speed. You're mainly going to experience getting there and stopping.
Each year, this UCLA grad program takes on a big problem and tries to solve it. The Hyperloop's biggest problem? Making tube travel comfortable.
So this is kind of like the Hyperloop think tank design center right now.
Okay.
What are these models over here?
So we have two sets of models. The first ones here at the back, they were really study models that were investigating. These are more of a finished product that investigate more of the interior situation and also the sitting.
So these are all the options of the capsules. What about the stations here?
So same thing with the station. This station is probably the most compact station. And it really, the entire activity actually happens almost here. This is more still of a lounge shopping area.
This is where you get your magazines, your coffee.
But still everything happens on the go.
This one looks very complicated here.
Yes.
All right. So anyway, you can't really tell what's going on in that. Here is a little bit more on Hyperloop One CEO talking about his baby.
American made technology, and obviously our reputation as innovating across so many categories of big transitions has been world leading. But in the area of ground transportation, in the area of high speed rail, there is no real American technology. So as a LA based company that's grown from a garage and building towards 500 employees this year, 260 right now, in less than 27 months, we're demonstrating that we can really build something new, something different by bringing the brightest minds together, providing them with the capital and tools required to make this happen. And the answer to your question is, we can do this in the United States if we collaborate with governments, if we work and support and get the support from regulators, so we can actually dovetail with existing transportation programs and write a few new rules for Hyperloop. And I think those two things are the conversations we're having here as well on Capital of big transitions.
All right. So just typical blather, but here's a little bit from, this is from last year, but 1,000 kilometers per hour, 700 miles per hour, travel in a tube.
Hi, welcome to another Cold Fusion video. In this video, we'll take a look at the Hyperloop, the brand new method of transport brought forth by the entrepreneur and billionaire Elon Musk. So let's get straight into it. First of all, what is it? Well, in broad terms, it's the fifth mode of transport. So far, throughout history, we've been using trains, cars, planes, boats, and technically rockets, but I haven't been in one, and you probably haven't either, so that doesn't really count. The Hyperloop is going to be the fifth form of transport. So going into more specific details, the Hyperloop is a high-speed transport system in which passengers sit in a pressurized capsule that rides on a cushion of air. The capsule operates in a sealed near-vacuum environment. The propulsion system is still to be chosen from a number of options, two of which are magnetic levitation or air pressure, similar to that of an air hockey table.
The blueprints are pretty complicated.
Well, blueprints are always kind of complicated. And I mean, yes, there's math, but it's really not that hard.
It still sounds pretty complicated, Elon.
It's like a tube with an air hockey table. It's just a low pressure tube with a pod in it that runs on air bearings, on air skis, with an air compressor on the front that's taking the high-pressure air buildup on the nose and pumping it through the air skis. It's really, I swear, it's not that hard.
The system is proposed to travel at an average speed of 900 kilometers an hour and at a top speed of 1,220 kilometers an hour. Elon really doesn't have that much time to do this one. He's too busy building rockets, electric cars, and batteries to power homes. So he's given away this idea and outsourced it in the form of a competition. Several companies have formed to take on the project, and even some all-star, interdisciplinary, student-led teams are working together to advance the Hyperloop technology. But more on this later. So why does Elon Musk...
All right, I just want to give you this next part of this story, which is really exciting, and I don't know if there's even the tiniest shred of opportunity for this to happen, but engineers, and this is from the 13th, this is from today, actually, engineers just submitted an incredible proposal to turn the U.S. border into a Hyperloop. So think of a tube, a long tube, it's white, it's painted white, it's big enough for a car to drive through it, certainly. And if certainly bigger than that as well. Stretching from somewhere in Texas, let's just say the bottom of Mexico and Texas, in theory, over to California, the Trump administration is reviewing design bids for a proposed wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, as everybody knows, but a group of Mexican and American engineers and urban planners called MADE Collective want to build a $1 trillion Hyperloop transportation network instead. The plan would turn the border into a shared nation called Otra Nation with an independent local government and not voting representatives in the U.S. and Mexican legislatures. The group submitted its design to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection's official call for proposals in March. It also launched a petition to replace the current border fencing with its Hyperloop. Here are the details. Otra Nation Hyperloop would stretch 1,250 miles along the border and would also feature solar farms to power the Hyperloop. And so anyway, I just wanted you to hear that. Now, I've got a little bit of Jim Gaffigan for you, and I've got Rick Little here in the studio. Well, here's a little bit of Gaffigan for you. I think this is safe for work broadcasting, but I only heard about two-thirds of it. The lady is very upset on this call, but this is Jim Gaffigan on the air, an offended Christian.
93.3, The Bone in Rush. Jim Gaffigan is our guest here.
He's funny.
Yeah, but you pissed somebody off, man.
Oh, dear.
You've done it, son.
Oh.
You've done it.
Well, if I can offend one person, being the most middle of the road comic I know.
It's like... Just hold on. Do you mind talking to this person?
Not at all.
Okay. Hello, The Bone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dana.
Hey, what's up, girl?
I'm mad at that guy. Who the hell does he think he is? You don't talk about religion or politics. And if he's Catholic, what are we going to do? Pray him into heaven?
I don't think it'll work.
I'm very offended. Tell him that he is wrong.
What
do
you tell
wrong.
Him? Don't tell me. You tell him, Jim. She's pissed off at you.
All right. So you're saying that you don't think that God has a sense of humor?
Yes, I do. He created you.
Boy,
created
you just came out here with your claws didn't you?
Your tone and your behavior is just downright Christian, lady.
I just
lady.
Really don't appreciate that.
You sure you don't have an abortion
caller.
Doctor to kill or something?
Are you going to be prayed into heaven? You have to go to purgatory and we have to pray you into heaven? Is that it?
Lady, look, the applications for the Third Reich are over, all right?
You know what? You have freedom of speech, but didn't your mom and dad teach you there's two things you don't talk about, and that's religion and politics? And you're on the radio, The Bone, for God's sake. I'm very offended.
You're offended?
Yes.
Well, you should watch this movie called Inherit the Wind, all
you
right?
You should watch Armageddon, okay?
All right. You mean with Bruce Willis?
No.
Trust
with
me,
Satan.
Lady.
Girl, you stepped right into
with
that
Satan.
One. I'm sorry.
No, with Satan.
Why
no.
don't you read a little bit about what Jesus said, all right, instead
I know exactly
of what your preacher
what
is telling you
said.
What to say?
If you didn't read the Bible, how do you know so much?
Well, maybe that's called irony, all right?
Well, you know what? You're a joke. And
I
you have
so.
Really upset me because I love The Bone, and Bo happens to be one of my dearest friends.
Well,
he
I'd
knows
like to
that I'm not a mean, rude person because I'm very, very, very nice.
Yeah, but you woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
I woke up on the wrong side of the damn bed.
Calm down, girl. Calm down.
All right. Well, just tell me where your glass house is.
Well, I don't have a glass house. I don't live in one, and neither do you. But I don't appreciate what you said. I don't think it's funny at all.
I guess you won't be wanting free tickets to the show at the Improv then, will you?
Well, I would love it. As an apology, that would be awesome.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. I'm serious as a hot bone.
Now, why would you want to come and see a sinner like me?
Yeah, I sin. I don't have angel wings, do you?
Whoa.
Is she gone?
I think she's gone.
I should rephrase that. I think it's a glass trailer.
All right, we got Rick Little here. We're going to come back. We talked about... just a minute ago, Hyperloop. What do you think about that? Get rid of the source of division and what the city council voted against. And the city council has many weighty matters to decide, like whether or not we have a border fence. And we do appreciate that they would step into, you know, because I think the United Nations and President Trump is going to study these documents carefully. Anyway, we're going to be back with Rick Little in just a minute. Always great to have him on the show. He's going to tell us about the legislature, and we'll be back after a break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, 805-6180. Don't hang up. Don't get off this radio. We got some good Rick Little coming. It's Kelly 706, the 13th. It's Lucky 13. And I have one statement to Greg Smith. Build a city with an economy before you tell other people what to do. Just my opinion, Greg. I don't mean for you to choke on your bagel this morning. But anyway, we have Rick Little here. And Rick, good to have you back in the studio. How you been?
Thank you. Glad to be here. I'll tell you what, I'm glad to be back from the legislature in Santa Fe. That's a whole different country.
Is it Satan's lair up there?
The den, I think, is what it is.
Sounds a little cozier than whatever I called it, the lair. Just in case, because there's some people who really don't know much about politics at all, where is your, you know, what you're in the which branch of the government, and where's your area that you cover?
Okay, it's a House of Representatives, which there's 72 of us. There's 70 of us, and we are all around the state. We have about 30,000 people in our particular districts. My particular district ends up with Chaparral, the East Mesa of Las Cruces, White Sands, Holloman Air Force Base, and the very southern end of Alamogordo and Otero County. So I'm in two counties.
So it runs the absolute gamut.
It does. And most of it's rural. And we are just barely on the edge of the city of Las Cruces. So we're on the outskirts. And most people in my district want some space and wanted to get away from it.
Well, that's good. And this is your third run? This is your third time in the body?
Yeah, third time around. And I'll tell you what, as far as the legislature is concerned, it was the toughest time around because of the budget situation that we're in right now. And we did have to clean up the budget from 16 and 17. And
Sounds painful. All right, so
it was real painful.
Lay down a little bit of what are the parameters on the budget? What were you dealing with?
Well, what we had is when oil and gas is about one third of the budget of the state of New Mexico. And when they are down, we are down. So we were down at least probably if you looked at it as a whole for the last couple of years, about $1 billion down. And but
that's incredible.
But one thing about it, though, is that when government grows, when the economy's good, and when oil and gas was booming, guess what? We got government coming out of our ears, all kinds of programs, different things going on. And so, but when it gets lower, and we have to cut, I agree with the governor. The government's way too big, and there's a lot of cutting that still could have been done instead of raising taxes.
So we're a very dependent body upon the U.S. government, upon the state government, upon the U.S. military. And that is not going to change in any time in the near future.
Well, it's not. And as a matter of fact, if it does, we're in a lot of trouble.
Sanctuary City. Can anybody say Sanctuary City?
Yeah, that's right. And if you say Sanctuary City, you better think twice about it, because if you're going to lose your federal funds, you're going to be, most of us will be in a dire hurt.
Have you had any conversations with anyone regarding that topic, that there is peril at the positions that some of the places in New Mexico have taken these positions on the sanctuary status?
Well, and as a matter of fact, the city of Santa Fe stands to lose $6 million of federal government money if they don't stay with their status. Well, you say that's all, but it's a lot. And that's just the federal money coming in. So and that depends on how Trump does the sanctions.
Well, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, what if the federal government decides to not only take the money, what if they decide to sue these bodies, the counties, the cities, how long would that take? How much resources would be poured into it from our side? And what would be the likely outcome? Is there a defense against refusing to apply federal law?
I don't see any defense in that at all. How long it would take? I mean, your guess is as good as mine. This is over my head as far as that concerns.
Sounds
all
like
I know is we better change our attitude towards sanctuary cities and just do what we've got to do to comply with the law, because it is the law.
All right. And so we're in the middle of a budget crisis. That's the last thing we need, is to lose more money. And so how much, just give people a rough estimate of what you said we lost $1 billion. Was that $1 billion in sales of oil and gas, or was it $1 billion in tax funding?
Well, that would have been in tax funding.
That is incredible.
Yes.
How do we deal with, how can we possibly absorb that?
Well, the thing about it is, just if you take our government as a whole,
yeah,
you know, the state of Texas has 16 departments. You know, the state of New Mexico,
yeah,
had to make the round table in the governor's office bigger because we have about 26 departments. Something's wrong with this picture when we only have 2 million people in this state.
Wow. Lots of places at the table. So has there been a movement to reduce or eliminate some of these?
As a matter of fact, I've had some bills myself to try to do that. They didn't go anywhere. I really believe our tourism in this state should be a part of economic development, what it is, and that's exactly what it should be for, is to bring tourism into this state, to bring economic development and jobs into this state. And so that's just one place. We've got a couple of 3 different health departments. So, there's plenty to do in our department.
And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Michael. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
What's up, Mike?
I'm doing okay.
What's your topic?
The whole thing with the oil and gas is they're still having trouble with the flaring rule, which involves hydrogen sulfide, and you can't sell it anywhere. But the Democrats are trying to make the oil producers try to sell it, and it can't be sold. Nobody wants it.
Is it the stuff that makes that smell like rotten eggs?
It does.
Yeah,
it's very dangerous. That's why we flare it.
And I
say we for about another month. I finally decided to get out of oil and gas because New Mexico is not healthy for people to own oil and gas.
Why? Why is that?
Because all these rules are meant to close oil wells. These are stripper oil wells, which don't produce a whole lot. You add a whole bunch of extra requirements on them, and we just cap them and get out of it.
And you're absolutely right. And one of the things that the progressives or the Democrat side of the House over there is trying to do is to put more regulations on oil and gas. It's it seems a funny thing that that's a third of our budget approximately, and we're trying to kill this particular industry, and it's the only one that brings in money for this state.
Well, and Michael, when you hear about this, you hear about the devastating impact on the reduction in prices of oil. And yet you understand that there's a number of groups in New Mexico who would like us to just completely get out of gas and oil. It's like there's a suicide cult out there.
Well, you know, if they get their way, they're going to be very sad.
Yes, and matter of fact, we've even got Santa Fe for one is trying to stop any exploration in the area as far as oil and gas too. And my thought on that is, well, that's fine. Then don't give them any oil and gas money and then see how that goes.
Yeah, we were doing that with Mora County, who said that you couldn't drill. And they said, well, you can't have tax money then.
Well, except I don't think the legislature is going to let that happen because it's kind of statewide law. But fact of the matter is, they shouldn't be able to do that if they want to get any of the funds that come from oil and gas.
That's absolutely anything. I'm sorry, Mike.
If they want to use gasoline to drive around.
That's true. Absolutely. Mike, anything else?
No, thanks, Rick, for what you do. Thanks so much. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good day. All right, folks. So, okay, let's we got a little break here, and we'll take this break and come back and talk to Rick, and feel free to call in with your comments, your questions, any questions that you have about things that happened during the session. And we're going to come back and just kind of pick through this. And Rick was generous enough to volunteer to come on the show when I think that there's some increased activity down at Rawson's Builder Supply. Don't forget to get down there for all your needs, but Ben was not able to make it today. We'll be right back. 716 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. And we will be back to talk to Rick Little. All right, so we're here with Rick Little, and you're a House member. If you live in Chaparral and East Mesa, all these places, a white sense. All right, so I had mentioned something, and you had asked me about it, Rick. The view of millennials, the approach of millennials, this is my impression. We've raised a generation or two of people who have been fed the idea through the media, through the education system, maybe through the internet as well, that the way that you want life to be is there's a connection between what you are sympathetic to or what you believe in and reality. And so if there is, for example, a varmint hunting contest and it's offensive to people, and we've really just fed this idea that it's the minority that sets the pace in America. If there's a group of people that are offended by a coyote shooting contest, that has to stop by definition because it's offensive. There's no debate anymore on in so many of these topics. I think these millennials are living in their hothouse flowers. How are they going to make it in the real world if they get, if they ever have to leave the comfy confines of mom and dad's basement?
And you're absolutely right. I think part of our problem is we're trying to bring California, I think, rules, regulations, and laws.
Well, how's California doing?
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say. How's it going for them? You know, we have, and I think this utopianism is part of the problem.
How do you define utopianism when you use the word?
Well, it's how you think life should be. So the more programs you have, the better off people are going to be. The more welfare you have, the better off people are going to be. And when you really look into the facts, the more raising minimum wage, the better off people are going to be.
And it is a very superficial and thoughtless approach to life.
It absolutely is. And when you look at, if you take these and look at the facts on these issues and really weigh them out, you'll find out that even raising the minimum wage, well, you know, it should help everybody. It'll help. But you know what? Even if you raised it and we had $9 up there, which was our lower number, the other one was 15. But when you raise that, what do? You have now every product that every person buys, it goes up. The person that is now getting the job now is going to be paying more tax, plus paying more tax for everything they buy, plus every product went up. I mean, it's a snowball effect that really, and they're still in poverty because it didn't raise them out.
And I was talking to some of the folks down at Coas Books, and they said they have been very negatively impacted by the minimum wage laws. And I mean, folks, you gotta be able to make a profit to stay in business.
And you do it private market. I am a free market enterprise. Capitalism is the only, that's what's run this country for over 200 years.
You know what capitalism does is it allows the natural forces, the natural things that help set prices. It's not an artificial price setting as you have in socialism. There's a disconnection between the market and the creation of stuff, whether services or products. If it's dislocated, then you have no idea. It's like somebody who gets paralyzed. The brain's not connected to the body.
And that's absolutely right. And we had this debate in the House during the 60-day legislature. And you know, if you look at, I even looked up Europe, the countries that had minimum wage requirements were not doing as well as the ones that had no minimum. The wages were higher in those particular countries than it was in the others. Now, that tells you something.
Thomas Sowell gets on, and Thomas Sowell is an African-American writer on these issues and probably one of the most brilliant people that I've ever read. And he said that black employment, which has been for 50 years higher than white employment, black unemployment has been higher than white employment or other races. More blacks were employed before the minimum wage laws were put in. So we have all these ideas for how to make life better, and it's the law of unintended consequences.
And that's absolutely right. The unintended consequences are, especially in minimum wage, is that the only person entity that gains from this is tax-receiving entities, because the profit of the company goes up, so they pay more taxes. Every item went up, more taxes are paid. The person that's trying to get that job, more taxes pay. And then you've got the inequality. This is going to put young people out of getting a job. And then the ones that do have a job that are making close to what the other person's making now are going to want to raise. I mean, so it's just a snowball effect that just does not work.
Absolutely. All right. So what were some of the biggest issues that you guys tackled in the legislature besides not having any money?
Well, that was the first one. We should have fixed the budget, and we didn't do it because we knew when that budget came out from the Democrat side of the House, we knew that it wasn't going to get passed. So we knew we were going to be back in a general special session, which is a wrong. That's the first thing. You knew it wasn't going to happen. They wanted to raise taxes $1 million on, and most of those taxes are going to be raised on people that can't afford it. And we're at a tax rate now that most of us can't afford it anyway. We should have been, our priority should have been on getting jobs, creating jobs. It should have been on improving public education. It should have been, you know, to make our communities safer. I mean, that's what the government's supposed to be for. These social issues are things that we need to work on, and there's programs, but I think we spend way too much money on issues that are not progressing the state.
And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
This is Chuck. Good morning to you folks.
Good morning, Chuck. What's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, a couple things. One, earlier you were talking about the attacks on oil and gas production. There's also there's a tax going on any industry that is extractive, regardless of whether it's mining, oil, gas, lumber. Sure. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to see two results here. Eventually, you're going to see, probably pretty quick, you're going to see a big reduction in state income from these industries. And I think it's going to be followed by a really, really aggressive push for the state to become a grower and supplier of dope. I think legalization of pot is going to become a big push in the legislature to make up for the losses they're going to get from other industries.
Well, Chuck, the gay evangelist, Bill McCamley, the gay lord of Mesilla Valley, has put his he goes after all the low-hanging fruit, and this is his next love affair.
You know, and in the legislature, you're absolutely right about these. The environmentalists are really coming against anything that can make money in this state, and especially those that are already going. I will say that at least our land commissioner is trying to do everything he can to raise money for this state to try to get our budget back in.
Are you in agreement with his ideas?
I am in absolute agreement with his ideas. What it does is this will create jobs. It'll be the land in the state of New Mexico. I'd love for all of it to stay pristine, you know, and I don't want to just, rape the countryside and take everything. But you know what? We do not have a logging industry because of an owl. We right now up in Cloudcroft, we have our cows cannot get water because we're trying to get an extinct frog that's going extinct. They're going to fence off the area. And these cows have been here now for 100 years, but now they're going to be put out, and maybe they'll become
crazy.
Extinct.
Absolutely. Chuck, anything else?
Yeah, I had a
briefly
conversation with a gentleman during the last election cycle. I don't remember his name or the position he was running for, because he was a very forgettable individual, so he's perfect for whatever office he was running for. But he was talking about building up New Mexico, and I mentioned the fact that originally from California, I've got a lot of family out there, and that people in my family who have businesses are talking about leaving California. If they can sell their businesses, their houses, they want to get out of that state. And they were asking me, well, what about New Mexico? And I told them, you start going east, you go right through New Mexico into Texas or Florida. Don't stop. And I mentioned this to this gentleman, and he told me, oh, but that's not right. New Mexico is your state. I said, you want me to lie to my family? I said, I had a business here for 15 years, sole proprietorship. And New Mexico, it was a toss-up whether New Mexico or the U.S. government made my life more of a living hell. I am not, and if you move to New Mexico at this time, all you're doing is moving from California back to Little California.
Okay, Chuck, hold on a second. We gotta go. I'm up against a break. Thanks for the call. Have a good day. All right, folks. When you're calling in, hit it and quit it. We'll be right back. Got Rick Little. We'll be right back. Love Chuck. Chuck is a brilliant guy. And I actually know some people who know Chuck and said he is just, his IQ's off the chart. Good call. 523-1450. We'll be right back on AM Las Cruces AM 1450. We've got Rick Little here. He's your representative, one of the couple of representatives from this area. When you hear politicians, elected people that are supposed to be representing the people, say we live in a no-growth area, what's your gut tell you? What's your response to that?
Well, and then we wonder why we can't make a budget. I think that's about the worst thing we can do, and I think that's an idea that comes from not wanting any more business, not wanting competition, not wanting the tax base to go up. I mean, you can raise taxes on the people that are already here, but I'll tell you, the taxes that we're paying right now, and people don't really understand when you put all of your taxes together, not just the federal, but your state, your income tax, your local sales tax, your land tax, when you property taxes, when you put all that together, you are probably paying anywhere from 50 to 60% of your income is now going back for taxes.
That's incredible.
It is. It is, but really add it up, because I've done it a few times. And if you're in business, it could be even more than that.
And we've got another phone call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Morning. This is David. I sell to every health food store south of I-40. They have all just shut down. We now have Vitamin going out of business and Abundant Living because of what the new policies are on the people here in this.
What are the new policies, David?
well, the minimum wage right off the top, but also the Walgreens stepping in, Obamacare stepping in. They've wiped out every health food store. Every independent now has gone out of business.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because, you know, mom and pops are stores or small industry is what is the backbone of the state of New Mexico. And
the liberals who want the health food stores are now, their policies are shutting them down.
That's right. That's right. And you've got these big chains coming in doing stuff that the mom and pops used to do. And the monies that they're, what they do is I think they lower their prices for a minimum period of time to where the other businesses cannot afford it. And then they'll go up to be more expensive.
Walmart, Wild Herbs and Rio Doso just shut down last week. Vitaman will be shut down by the end of this month.
Terrible.
And Abundant Living in Alamogordo.
Terrible. Good.
No independence.
Good point, David. Thanks for the call. All right. So what can we do? I mean, and, you know, if the fact of the matter is that these policies and laws are shutting businesses down, you know, I'm thinking about we lost Sitel 400 positions. It was an absolute catastrophe. I mean, Rick, I got to say, you'd go to other cities our size. We have one skyscraper. And the elevators don't even work on it. I mean, I find this so bizarre. You go to other cities this side, they really actually have, in the downtown area, they have buildings that are more than a couple stories tall, and they, you know, they've got a downtown.
And part of that is what does a business look for when they come to a state or come somewhere? Taxes and regulations, and we are not good in either one of them. Our regulations in this particular county just as bad as Bernalillo County, which is you know, a lot more expensive, but they're just as bad. And if you've got those kind of regulations, what kind of business even wants to come here? And I think that's we're keeping ourselves small.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think there's and so what do these people hope to do? We've all been through towns that have shrunk. We've all driven through. You know, sometimes towns shrink because the highway went around them, didn't go through them. And so we've all seen areas where there was once an industry and there's not anymore, and they're ghost towns or they've really shrunk. And is that what these city leaders and county leaders want? What is their hope for outcome?
Well, and therein lies the problem. And in the legislature, those are the things that we're trying to debate and discuss over there. But the problem with the direction of the legislature right now is the fact that they don't mind minimizing all of these type of things. What are you there in the legislature for? Make more laws? No, really. And the fact of the matter is, we're at a point now we should be making less laws. We should be getting rid of obsolete laws and getting rid of all the obstacles that stand in front of people that are trying to make a living.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take a break here at six. Or pardon me. Flying those friendly skies. 737 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 to Colin. We'll be right back with Rick Little. All right. So what were some of the goals or some of the things that you wanted to see achieved this time around in the legislature? Folks, we're talking to Rick Little, representative from our area.
One of the main things that would have been a real high priority was a comprehensive tax reform for the state of New Mexico. Our gross receipts tax is a hybrid of all kinds. It's a mess. And so what we really needed to do was do that. And we had a bill out there. Representative Harper was working on that bill for the last 3 years. And we had it all finalized, and it looked like what it did, it was going to bring more people into the tax base, but lower taxes. And couldn't get that through whatsoever. And we worked on that the whole session. The budget was the main thing, but the thing about the budget was we didn't have to raise taxes to do it, to make a budget. We had, you know, even the legislature as a whole, the Republicans, we were trying to do, you know, our retirement fund is overfunded by 130%. Now, wait a minute, if we're overfunded, that 30%, we said, let's put that in there. We're asking everybody else to give up. Why don't we give up some? Well, I mean, that's the place that these things should happen. capital outlay this year, it was $62 million. Why couldn't we have used capital outlay for that? I mean, we have a film industry, which I like the business that comes to the state of New Mexico, but when you're paying them $50 million a year rebate, this is not a tax incentive, but a rebate that they just get back on everything they spend. You know, if that kind of theory worked, guess what? We should do it with every business, right? And everybody would be booming, but it doesn't work that way. So anyway, and right there, that's over $150 million. I mean, that we could have used to balance some of our budget. There's a lot of other places.
Give me a couple of ideas that you've had or you've heard around for common sense ways that we could grow the budget or grow the income of the state, the overall GDP of the state, and maybe I guess cut down on taxes.
I think one of the places and something else we did do is our workman's comp. We did change that to where it's better. It fixes us with other states and makes us at a better place. One of the things was public-private partnerships was talked about, and I'm not a real big fan of government getting involved. It seems like when government gets involved, but there are big projects that if you can work it out to where it's better for the people, that it could work, but it would just depend on how they had. And there was public-private partnerships. There was two or three of them. We had Representative Larenzaga had those out there. Couldn't get those type of things through, but that would have created business and more things happening in the state. We had our regulations is another one. If we could get our regulations down, I believe we'd have more businesses starting in this state. We'd have more people being able to do stuff and be able to, just like he was talking about just a few minutes ago, about these health food stores. If their taxes and regulations were down and we're not raising minimum wage on them and where they have a budget they can work with, they would be able to do it. One of the things we did pass the hemp, and I'm not sure if it totally got passed because it was at one of those deals of it was vetoed, but there wasn't a message given. And in hemp now, let's go back. Hemp is not marijuana. Hemp is 0.3% of THC, which is the mind-altering drug that's in it. But there's so many products. You know, we import every bit of our hemp is imported, and we're the biggest. This country is the biggest importer of hemp in the world. We've got, I believe if we can grow it. Now this was just a pilot program that was going to be done under New Mexico State University, which would have brought money in there and got the ball rolling as far as hemp. And if we can get the federal government and get our state government to get this in control, I mean, car products, there's car products in your car right now that were made out of hemp. Every car manufacturer uses it. Lotions, you've got creams. There's just all
kinds
of.
Well, I mean, from what I understand, hemp can be used to make almost anything. Plastic, it can be made to use to make paper. I've never really said any, because, I don't have a dog in the fight for hemp. But, let me ask you this. What about developing more industries in the state? What are some industries that we could have in this state that we don't?
Well, if you go back, and I ran one of the bills that were run on hemp, and what I'm looking for there is if we can get this pilot program going with the state and we can get it to where hemp is legal, I believe we can now, this is a perfect place for it because it takes one quarter of the water of alfalfa and it will now, I believe we'll bring, if we can grow enough of it, we'll bring manufacturing here and a processing here.
And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, sir. This is Bob.
Is this Bob?
I got a question for you, Kelly. Yes. Mr. Little or one of your listeners.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
How is it that the university is broke?
It's broke.
They're bankrupt.
How is the? Yeah.
They're bankrupt.
Yeah, Rick, is the university bankrupt?
Well, no. The university is not bankrupt. See, we have, and let me go. You know, in
well,
this.
Well, let me just ask Bob. Why do you say that? First of all, just so Rick can. Responded directly to the question.
Well, Nixon reported yesterday that the university is bankrupt.
Well, you know, I haven't seen that, but let me just try to give you a little bit of an overview. There's a certain amount of money that comes from the budget into higher education. And so one of the problems we have in the state of New Mexico is we have seven four-year colleges where you can get degrees from. You know, the state of Arizona has 6 million people, and they only have two. There's a reason for that. So the money can be used, and the money can go down to the kids, and so they can get their education, and everything is funded. We in the state of New Mexico need to downsize our system, even if it was to make New Mexico State the southern part and UNM the northern part or whatever. They could run their branch colleges and stuff. But, you know, part of what we have with our universities, too, is that, you know, they've expanded all over the place. I unfortunately went to a meeting at New Mexico State University, and as I'm walking through the halls, why are over half the classrooms, matter of fact, in this particular hall, there was three quarters of the classrooms were empty. Now, wait a minute. That means we have more buildings. Why does every discipline have to have their own building? And
every time you turn around, they're putting up a new structure, a new building.
Yeah, absolutely.
That cultural center.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I think those are part of the problems that we're having. I will say that Chancellor Carruthers is doing a good job. He downsized. He knew these cuts were coming. They were working really hard. And part of the problem is they don't want to raise tuition. My thought is,
I think they thought oil and gas revenue would always be up, you know.
And just like government, the more money you have, the bigger you expand. And then when things hit the fan a little bit, guess what? Now you, yep, with all these facilities, it's hard to downsize.
Don't they have a rainy day fund? I mean, I do.
Yes, sir. And we've got to run this like you would your household or a business. You know, either it's making money and it does, or then you got to downsize and make it work until you can get into a budget.
Thanks for the call, Bob. All right, folks, let's take a little break here, and we'll come back and talk to Rick Little, get some concluding thoughts of his experience in the legislature. 7:48. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. I'll have to get to your texts tomorrow. Be right back. It's Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly. This is your good friend, Bob.
Bob.
I'm going to be talking to the mayor today. Is there anything you want me to ask him?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't think the mayor is the biggest fan of me, but
I know.
What are you gonna talk to him about?
Well, I need to know if Representative Rick Little, if he's my representative. I'm over here north of Mayfield High School. 3 miles out in the county.
He is, yes. Yeah.
Oh, he is? Okay. I was wondering, I wanted to know if he's a Democrat, progressive, elitist, or what's going on with Mr. Little.
He's elitist Republican. He's a Republican. He's down-to-earth Republican.
Okay, I appreciate that. No other phone calls other than I hope that he would keep in contact with the consumer advocate, David Horowitz of Los Angeles, California. He's a very good friend of mine, and he gives great direction. I just wish we could get him on the radio, but that was years back.
Okay.
So, I'll let you go. I have to get ready to see the mayor. He's going to take me this on to get ready to see
Bob,
him.
Bob.
And I appreciate you very much.
Bob.
Yes.
Why are you meeting him?
Well, we're touching base. We're catching up on some old things going on. It's a private matter between. We can't go public. This is private, confidential. I mentioned that there's a possibility of $65 million coming into a partnership in an estate with a woman that I fall in love with. So I have to be very careful in what I say and who I talk to. But she did give me permission to talk to my friend. So that's
okay. All right. Okay. All right, Bob. Thank you. Thanks for the call. Good
thank
luck.
You,
all right. Bye bye. It is 7:51. And we're here with Rick Little, and we're just kind of concluding this conversation about the legislature. So the legislature, when it switched over to back to the Democrats, became more dysfunctional, it sounds like.
You know, I've been at, this is my third regime change. As a matter of fact, when I first came in, it was Lujan was the Speaker of House. And I think after running things for about 60 years, it ran fairly, you know, fairly smooth, but not, I was given a bill at 2:30 in the morning. Half the committee wasn't even there, but that's, and then when the Republicans took over, man, everything ran on time. It was functional. The lobbyists and people knew when the bills were going to be on. I mean, it was done real well. This year it was, I don't know. I believe it was a little more unorganized because they took it back over, and it was just not run real well as a whole. I just don't think we got a real.
What were some of the themes that you detected coming out of this new Democrat legislature?
Well, unfortunately, here comes this California stuff. I think there was a lot of fantasy bills were coming out. We had one of the bills was to change your birth. You can change your birth certificate if you feel like a woman, and you didn't even need to have an operation or anything, but you can go back. Now, this is a legal document that should be at the time of your birth. It's not, that shouldn't be changeable, but it was bills like that. Lactating, if you're a mother that just had a baby, you've got to have a certificate now for the nurse or the doctor or whatever to help you with your
certificate of lactation.
That's after, I mean, it just seemed like, and then Trump, let's don't build the wall. It's like, well, you know, this is federal stuff, and yeah, you can voice your opinion against it, but we spent a lot of time. Here's a couple of we have a state cheeseburger. Oh, it's a chili cheeseburger now. I mean, that was one of the bills, and then we had a state song and a state dance and a, you know, these. I don't know. I think the focus on this particular legislature was not good, and I think there was a lot of lost opportunities that we had. I think right to work would have helped us bring business into the state. I think prevailing wage is something that most of those are government jobs, where if we could get prevailing wage instead of using a union number for it and get an average for the state, we could save money and build more stuff, and our infrastructure would go further for the state. I mean, there was a lot of things that could have been done, should have been done.
So a lot of utopianism, and it's, were they not taking seriously the, I mean, what, so who was behind, was that from the gay evangelist, the switching of the birth certificate?
That was mainly the marijuana bill, which was another one that came through. You know, our younger, it seems like the younger people that are in the legislature are bringing these kind of things. Millennials have that. We were just talked about utopia a little while ago, a little bit of a different idea about what government is really for and what government should be doing. Government is not to take a person from cradle to grave. Government is to keep us, you know, society safe.
All right, here's a question for you. You've been on the outside, not in office. You're in office now. In your experience, more government equals happier people?
In my experience, less government. And I'm a small business owner too, so I believe that we should be less regulation, even less taxes would help, because we would put that money back into the economy.
Well, isn't it but from the left, you have to force people to do the right thing, because especially, you know, conservatives or Republicans, capitalists are greedy as all get out.
Well, it's either that or the government is greedy as all get out. I mean, you've got two different sides of this issue here. You can only, you know, I believe our founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves if they knew how much taxes that we were paying. I mean, they threw tea in the ocean for, you know, probably less than a cent of taxing from the British.
That's true. All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Rick. It's been great. Can we get you on in the near future?
I'd be glad to come back, Kelly.
All right, folks, I'm going to take us out with, did you have any concluding thoughts? Any,
you know,
how do people get a hold of you, by the way?
RickLittle4Rep@gmail.com is my email, or my website is RickLittle4Rep.com. And yeah, just get a hold of me anytime. I am on Twitter.
All right, I'm taking you out with some Jim Gaffigan. We want to thank Rick Little. That was a very entertaining hour. And we'll take you out with a little more Jim Gaffigan photos.
That's all we do, right, as a society. It's like, hey, instead of enjoying this moment, let's take pictures.
We take pictures of everyday life and act like we're capturing history.
Unbelievable. The cat's asleep.
Post that on my Twitter. Because we have the cameras on our phones. Do we need that? It's not like 10 years ago we were like, I wish I could take a low-quality photo of my dessert. Text it to someone that's not interested. But I can't, so I guess I'll just eat it. Yeah. As a result, we all have so many photos, all these pictures, and sure, we all want our computers to run slow. But what are we supposed to do with all these photos? I mean, I have more pictures of my children than my father ever looked at me. And I just keep taking them, like, click, click, click. We all do. You click, 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 download all of them. We don't even weed through them. I'll just get another computer. That'll be my Disney trip computer. We used to have boxes of photos in our closets. Now it's just old computers. There's our wedding computer. That's my computer when I was single. I should probably destroy that one. Sad. We have all these photos. Everyone has thousands of photos, and besides us, no one else cares. Because really, any photo you're not in is not that interesting. You might act interested, right? You're like, oh, you went to Mexico. How long is this going to take? Because I can fake it for like a minute. I don't even like pictures that I'm in. You know, you ever see a photo of yourself and it kind of ruins your day? For a second, you don't even recognize yourself. You're like, who's that fat guy? Oh, no. Oh, I should call my wife and tell her I love her. I can't believe I'm allowed to wear that color.
All right. So thanks for tuning in. Enjoyed having Rick on, and good guy, you know, real good guy, and need more people like that in the legislature. We talked about the Hyperloop, and I was looking at it closely. The Hyperloop's not a wall at all. It's a cry for universal government. You can walk between Mexico and America underneath the Hyperloop. So I don't think that's going to go anywhere. I guess Bannon is in trouble, but thanks for tuning in, and I'll take you out with some Pat Metheny song for Bill Bio from the album Travels. If you want a great double album, unbelievable. It was my favorite album for years. Have a good day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell, I'm Las Cruces. Ciao.